Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Welcome to ModPath Chat. It's my pleasure today to host one of the rising junior stars in our field, Dr. David Chappell. David recently joined the Department of Pathology at Michigan as an assistant professor. Dr. Chappell will be discussing with us his multi-institutional study on developing a risk stratification model for low-stage leiomyosarc. David conducted the study during his fellowship at the Brigham and Women Hospital. Thank you, David, for accepting my invitation, and congratulations on your new position.
Thank you, Dr. Netto. It's a pleasure to have been invited.
Yeah, I mean, I must say, we're having now repeat offenders. You're so good. We got to invite you twice. So
thank
I'm so
you.
Glad to have you here again. And there is a reason behind that. Is very prolific at this early stage. So a great example for our junior people in the field to pursue. So we'll talk about this. And before we talk in details, as usual, give us a little background, set up the stage about leiomyosarc of the uterus.
Sure. So as I'm sure most of our listeners know, leiomyosarcoma is the most common mesenchymal malignancy of the uterus, accounts for about half to three quarters of uterine sarcomas. And interestingly, about half to three quarters of uterine leiomyosarcomas actually present at stage one with uterine confined disease. And of those patients who present with stage one uterine leiomyosarcoma, about half to three quarters again will actually go on to develop a recurrence despite complete removal of the tumor through hysterectomy. And unfortunately, once recurrence develops, there's a high mortality. But as it happens, currently there's not any prognostic or risk stratification system that's widely used to help us understand which patients with stage one uterine leiomyosarcoma will recur and which will be cured through surgery. So in that context, this really is kind of the characteristic clinical pathologic question. And the idea really came from my mentor, Dr. Marie Sannucci, mm-hmm. who said, hey, we have this ongoing issue with between pathology and our clinical colleagues, where we're not quite sure how best to consider the prognostic status of these stage one uterine LMS patients. And so that was really the impetus for the study. We had great support from Dr. Suzanne George at the Dana-Farber. Mm-hmm. And then luckily I was on a research fellowship year supported by the Ovarian Cancer Research Alliance and was able to take on the project.
That's wonderful. You know, as we move to subspecialization, to have opportunities and funding to extend your fellowship and produce such impactful studies that really will hopefully change the way we do things. Great. And So I'm just curious. So surgery sounds like the mainstay of the treatment. Is adjuvant therapy when they recur? I mean, what happens adjuvant, or okay, they wait till they recur? Do they metastasize? What is just a little?
That's right. So the typical treatment for stage one uterine leiomyosarcoma is upfront surgery. And given that the disease in stage one tumors is uterine confined, can almost always be entirely excised through hysterectomy. Neoadjuvant therapy is exceptionally rare. I think looking at hundreds of cases, we had a couple patients who had gotten neoadjuvant therapy. And then, the patients are just observed over time. And when they recur, they will get systemic therapy. But upfront, systemic therapy is uncommon.
Excellent. So tell us about the cohort and the model.
Sure. So this study was actually kind of the flagship work from a larger, more systematic effort to characterize and review almost 1,200 uterine leiomyosarcomas that had been diagnosed at the Brigham in the last 30 years since 1989. And as I said, we started out with this defined clinical pathologic question. And so starting with that bolus of 1,200 cases, we narrowed that down to just the stage one tumors. And then in order to hopefully make our model as broadly applicable as possible, we only looked at stage one uterine leiomyosarcomas that had been either diagnosed following surgery at the Brigham or patients who had been referred to the Dana-Farber and the Brigham within 3 months of their original diagnosis and without a recurrence. And the idea there was to try to cut down on the referral bias that I think in some larger tertiary center studies can bias the model toward more aggressive actors if you're including lots of patients who are coming with their third or fourth relapse. Mm-hmm. So we actually narrowed our cohort somewhat to try to make it more broadly applicable. Then we went ahead, we got those cases. At that point, it was 186 cases. We looked at all the H&Es, made sure we agreed with the diagnoses, and in a number of instances actually got additional immunohistochemical studies to confirm the LMS diagnosis. And ultimately, we ended up from the Brigham with 86 Dana-Farber referral cases and 78 in-house cases for a total of 164 tumors from our institution. We were also lucky enough to have excellent collaborators, Dr. Zanoni and his colleagues from Italy, and Ricardo Lastra from the University of Chicago, contributing 24 and 15 cases, respectively, that met our inclusion criteria. So we were able to expand this beyond just our institution and end up with a cohort of 203 tumors in total.
Excellent. So it's truly multi-institutional and actually, across continent. That's great. And so you mentioned 17 routinely evaluated markers. I didn't know there's parameters. I didn't know there's that many, but I don't do this every day. So tell us, just briefly, how did you land on the parameters you selected?
Sure. So there were 5 clinical and 12 morphologic / pathologic parameters. Some of them came from previous work in the field looking at prognosis in leiomyosarcoma, things like tumor size, coagulative necrosis, pattern of tumor infiltration of the myometrium, lymphovascular invasion. And other ones just came from our observations, particularly those of my mentor, Dr. Nucci, over the course of her own clinical practice. And I would say routinely evaluated, or at least readily defined and readily morphologically evaluable parameters. Things that the idea being any pathologist could, looking down the microscope, examine these parameters and then be able to use our model. So we didn't want to include, for instance, immunohistochemical or molecular studies that might not be available at all institutions.
So very practical. And so let's zoom in on the actual risk score and on the parameters that turn out to be positive on univariate and multivariate analysis.
Sure. So yeah, as you say, we started out with a univariate analysis of these 17 parameters. And then we found that six of them were significantly associated with disease-specific and disease-free survival. And those were coagulative necrosis, mitotic rate, lymphovascular invasion, atypical mitoses, positive margin status, and what we ended up calling serosal abutment, which is where the tumor invades all the way through the thickness of the myometrium and just abuts the underside of the serosa, but without breaking through the serosa and growing on the surface of the uterus. And so with those six parameters significant on univariate analysis, we then proceeded to multivariate analyses, which provided us with hazard ratios for each of those six parameters. And we found that five of them were consistently independently associated with outcomes in multivariate. So mitotic rate, atypical mitoses, coagulative necrosis, LVI, and serosal abutment. Positive margin status actually didn't end up being independently associated with outcome, which I think is because we actually had only eight tumors with positive margins, and they were strongly correlated with that serosal abutment. So for statistical reasons, it didn't make it into the model.
Got it.
But we had those five variables consistently associated with outcome on multivariate analysis, and weighted by their hazard ratios, we came up with what I think is a pretty simple algebraic model that can help predict outcome. And that assigns a so-called risk score between 0 and 13, which is calculated by presence of coagulative necrosis times one, the presence of increased mitoses, which we defined as greater than 25 mitoses per 10 high power field times two, atypical mitoses times two, lymphovascular invasion times three, and serosal abutment times five. So you add up these five variables and you get your score ranging from 0 to 13.
Excellent. So it's weighted. So not each parameter is equal based,
exactly,
like you explained, on the hazard ratio.
Exactly.
And you calculate. And I must say, the 10 high power field, since we had Dr. Ian Cree on previous episode talking about, counting mitosis, what's the high power field? It varies according to your microscope.
Absolutely.
And all that. So you define it as 2.4 square millimeter. And that's an important, I think, as we go on to more precise measurements of parameters. So you do that. It's sounding like almost like a prostate nomograms. So you do that, and then you can simplify it and break it into three categories, my understanding.
That's right. Yeah. So after we had done a fairly thorough internal and external validation of the model and felt confident that we had arrived at a simple algebraic formula to predict the risk of recurrence and of death from disease, we were still left with a score from 0 to 13. And that raises the question, okay, well, what if I'm a 3? What if I'm a 5? What if I'm an 8? How do you help patients to distill this down even further? And so using the receiver operator characteristic curves we had generated as part of our validation, we were able to run an algorithm in our statistical software that could identify optimal breakpoints, thus saying patients who fall below this level are at low risk and above this level are at high risk. We actually identified three prognostically distinct groups. So patients with a score between 0 and 2 were low risk, 3 to 5 were intermediate risk, and 6 or greater, or 6 to 13, were considered high risk. And when we took those three groups and we went back and looked at our Kaplan-Meier curves, we saw that those three groups broke apart very nicely. So just looking at, for instance, five-year disease-specific survival, in low-risk patients, it was 95%, intermediate-risk patients, 64%, and high-risk patients, 33%. So you're getting quite distinct differences between these three groups, which of course were statistically significant. And I'll also point out that the three groups were quite balanced. So we had about a third of our patients falling into each of the groups, which of course, even if it hadn't been that way, I think would still be helpful, but it does sort of give us an idea that these leiomyosarcomas are sort of spread across the risk spectrum.
Excellent. So, to remind, to mention, because not all, if you can apply the system, I guess, a little more simplified on a myomectomy, do you want to mention something?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. And so One thing we noticed was that about 10 to 15% of the leiomyosarcomas that we saw were either morcellated specimens or were at least initially seen as a myomectomy. And in those instances, it might be difficult to evaluate, in particular, lymphovascular invasion if you're not seeing the background myometrium, and also this serosal abutment, because if the tumor's been fragmented either through myomectomy or morcellation, that may be difficult to ascertain. So we then took our full risk model with five variables. We took away LVI and serosal abutments. You're just left with coagulative necrosis, atypical mitoses, and mitotic rate. And we found that even that simplified system was still significantly associated with disease-free and disease-specific survival, and could also be broken down into sort of a low-risk, high-risk, two-tiered system. Of course, it statistically underperformed the full model. So when possible, you always want to get all five parameters if you can, but it's not always possible. And in those instances, you can apply the simplified risk model and still give the clinician and the patient a sense of the patient's risk going forward.
Excellent. So I guess going forward, if people start using this, hopefully those falling into the high risk, maybe either closer monitoring or back to the treatment, maybe earlier or whatever. So it remains to be seen. This study could not address that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my mind, this is just the beginning of what hopefully will be a series of studies looking at the utility and the practical applications of this model. And absolutely, it comes back to management and patient outcomes. If a patient's high risk, should they be managed differently than a patient who's low risk? I think intuitively, you get the sense that there probably is something we could do to acknowledge from management standpoint the difference in risk. But of course, until further studies are done, it's unclear what exactly that would be.
Excellent. Very well done. And hopefully an impactful study and impressive. And thank you very much for coming again.
And thank you.
It's been a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine, I'm sure.
Yes. Before we close, I want to remind the audience, I mentioned David been here before, but that's before we started using the video component of the podcast. So if you like the podcast and you want to watch it, it's now broadcasted on the USCAP channel, YouTube channel. So in addition to Acast or iTunes and all the other platforms. So long, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath Chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.